Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Across the United States, there are preparations to say goodbye to 2016 and ring in the new year. In his last weekly radio address of the year, President Obama reflected on the last 8 years as he prepares to leave office.
Almost every country on earth sees America as stronger and more respected today than they did 8 years ago. And marriage equality is finally a reality from coast to coast. We have made extraordinary progress as a country these past 8 years. And here's the thing. None of it was inevitable. It was the result of tough choices we made and the result of your hard work and resilience.
He cited the recession, consistent job losses, and nearly 180,000 troops in Iraq and Afghanistan as challenges faced when he took office in 2009, but said that now, 8 years later, America tells a different story. The president said that during his administration, the economic recession had turned into a recovery. Millions of jobs created. Al-Qaeda terrorist leader Osama bin Laden taken out by American forces. 165,000 troops had come back home. The president will meet with Democrats in Congress Wednesday to discuss ways to protect his signature health care law, since Republicans have threatened to repeal it. President and Democratic lawmakers hope to devise a strategy to delay the Republican-controlled House and Senate from repealing much of the Affordable Care Act without providing a replacement plan. House Republicans in Congress have voted numerous times to repeal all or parts of the law, which was not taken up by the Senate. And while campaigning, President-elect Donald Trump vowed to gut the bill. Republicans have indicated that they'll do the same. This is VOA News. Iraqi officials say two bombs exploded in central Baghdad this Saturday, killing at least 25 people. At least 50 people were wounded in the attack. And they say the death toll is likely to rise. And Reuters reports a suicide bomber detonated one of the bombs while the other was a planted explosive. Ahmed Ahmed is with the paramedics who responded to the blast. He said, "When we heard the explosion, we came and we found people wounded and killed and asked, why does this happen in Iraq? There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but the Islamic State militants usually claim such bombings." The United Nations Security Council is to vote on a resolution that would endorse the ceasefire agreement in Syria brokered by Russia and Turkey. The draft resolution expresses support for a roadmap to peace, starting with a transitional government, and calls for rapid, safe, and unhindered access to deliver humanitarian aid throughout Syria. It says a meeting scheduled for late January between the Syrian government and opposition will be an important part of the Syrian-led political process aided by the United Nations. Human rights activists say at least one person has died in sniper fire in Syria, where the ceasefire agreement went into effect early Friday. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says most of Syria is calm, but there have been clashes between regime forces and their militia supporters and militant factions in some areas. Brazilian police say the Greek ambassador to Brazil, who was last seen alive Monday, was murdered by his Brazilian wife and her police officer boyfriend, who has confessed to the killing. Investigators say that the body found, believed to be that of diplomat Kyriakos Emeritus, in a burned-out rental car in the rough Rio de Janeiro neighborhood. The couple had been vacationing there, and the ambassador was due to return to work January 9th. His wife reported to police Wednesday that her husband had left the house Monday night and not returned. Investigators said Friday they found blood they believe was from the ambassador on the couch of the house where the couple had been staying. Police officer Sergio Moreira confessed to the murder, saying he killed the ambassador at the home late Monday and then moved the corpse to the car, where it was later driven to the spot where it was found and burned. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has praised Russian President Vladimir Putin for how he is handling new sanctions imposed on Moscow by President Obama for what the White House describes as interference by Russian intelligence agencies in November's U.S. national election. Mr. Trump will become the next U.S. president January 20th and tweeted, "Great move on delay," referring to Putin's decision. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
People are for peace. People are tired of war. The people of South Sudan are tired of war. They don't want this war. People are actually getting on with their lives to make sure that South Sudan is peaceful.
Three army generals loyal to former South Sudanese First Vice President Dr. Riek Machar defect to join the government in Juba.
The media in Zambia continues to be harassed. The media in Zambia continues to operate at very bad laws, suffer intimidation and all those invectives that suppress media freedom.
The Zambian government rejects accusations it is out to harass or intimidate the private media.
I want to seize the opportunity to encourage forces of law and order to do everything possible to put an end to criminality which is rampant in our region.
And the Cameroon seizes a large consignment of weapons from the Central African Republic's armed groups. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Three army generals from the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, or SPLMIO, led by former Affairs Vice President Dr. Riek Machar, have announced their defection to the South Sudanese Army. This after the defectors accused Machar of failing to lead the SPLMIO movement in the right direction. For reaction, I reached Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lol Gatkoth in the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
People are for peace. People are tired of war. The people of South Sudan are tired of war. They don't want this war. People are actually getting on with their lives to make sure that South Sudan is peaceful. Padak, I am from Padak. This is my area. I'm from Maywood and Longwechuk. They are for peace, and people wanted to move on with their lives. This is a victory to the people of South Sudan and to the President of the Republic, President Salva Kiir, and the First Vice President General Taban Dengai, because they are the people who are championing peace now.
How will this help in moving the peace process forward, or for that matter, the implementation thereof?
Well, if, as you have seen, if all generals now are reaching out to themselves from all sides of the warring factions, they are reaching out to themselves, they are saying peace is the only option, that definitely it is going to help the peace implementation, because you will not even have any skirmishes. Anybody who is actually continuing with hit and run tactics here and there, he will be treated as criminal, and then definitely you will not have any cause. You will be dealt with by the government. It is helping because everybody, whether you are a civilian or you are a military person, you are for peace. And that is what you have heard and you have read now. The people everywhere are for peace, including the generals who just came from Padak.
Some supporters of the SPLM-IO are saying that these defections were engineered by President Salva Kiir to undermine his political opponent, who he sees as a very potent, in this case, Dr. Riek Machar, and this is bad faith because of the peace agreement the two signed about bringing peace to South Sudan. What is your reaction to that?
You know that there was an agreement signed in 2015 August, and that is the agreement people are implementing. Peace is there, peace is being implemented. Anybody who is opposed to peace is just a warmonger. The agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan is still alive. It is being implemented by President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Taban and the Vice President James Wanyika and the whole cabinet. And the people are moving on with their lives. Peace cannot be quit with individuals, as there are some people who are still hanging out there saying that unless Victor Riek is back to Juba, that's why I will implement peace, or that's why I will see peace. Then you are wrong. Peace is people. Victor Riek is in South Africa. He's not coming back. People should move on with their lives.
Well, I understand Taban Dengai is visiting some still hot spots in various parts of the country. If the peace agreement is being implemented as the government wants us to believe, why are there any hot spots in the country? And why is Taban Dengai, the first vice president, visiting these areas? What does he want to achieve by that? Or for that matter, what does the government want to achieve by this?
Well, you know, he's actually now, as you have heard or you have read, he's in Ye, the Free State. Ye is there now with the whole delegation, including senior members in the government. So the first vice president of the Republic, His Excellency General Taban Dengai, is actually visiting Ye because there are a lot of messages that are going around that there is looming genocide. And they are actually quoting Ye. He has arrived there. Ye is peaceful. He is going to move on to other areas in the Equatorial region. He's actually to consolidate peace. And the IOs who are actually in Ye and in Yambio, and in Torit, and in Poita, this is a greater Equatorial region, they are now being actually asked to actually go to the cantonment site. This is actually helping, because the hotspot areas are where we have some criminal activities that are being carried out, like ambushes on the highways and so on and so forth. He's there to make sure that these skirmishes are stopped and the people will go to the cantonment sites. Then we move on with the implementation of the agreement.
Ezekiel Lol Gatkuoth is the South Sudanese Petroleum Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Juba. The Zambian government says it is a misconception that it is out to harass or intimidate the private media. New Information Minister Kapamba Mulenga rejected accusations that the administration has caused to settle with sections of the private media. Ms. Mulenga said that the government simply wants to see professionalism in the press. For reaction, I reached Richard Mulonga, an independent multimedia journalist in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
She's the new information minister, but what she has said is not anything new, because her predecessors have made such an empty assurance before, and the media in Zambia continues to be harassed. The media in Zambia continues to operate at very bad laws, suffer intimidation, and all those invectives that suppress media freedom.
Has media organizations sat down with this government, this new information minister, to talk about some of the challenges you face regarding press freedom or free press?
There's no such meeting that I'm aware of. I stand to be corrected. What I'm aware of is that the minister immediately she was appointed in that position undertook what they call media visits, familiarization tours to some of these organizations. But she has not met media bodies. She's new on the job. I suspect that she still has time to meet bodies like the Media Institute of Southern Africa, the Zambian chapter. We also have the Press Association of Zambia. We have the Zambian Bloggers Network. We also have an amalgamation of these media bodies, what we are calling the Media Liaison Committee. There are no such meetings that I've heard of, but I'm pretty sure that she will meet these media bodies where they can have a frank talk about what is it that is affecting the media in Zambia. But in the past, such meetings have taken place. This kind of engagement between the subsequent ministers of information have taken place. And really, the politician will always go with their own views and their own way of doing things. The media environment in Zambia really is not conducive, despite these engagements that we're discussing.
Critics of the media in Zambia have been saying that the private media organizations have not been able to regulate themselves, and sometimes they are biased against the ruling party. Ganging up with the opposition just undermine government effort without offering critical solutions that will help run or administer the country. What is your take on that?
But when you look at the Zambian media landscape, the public media, which is so heavily controlled by the state, is also very biased against all opposition, independent voices. You see, biased against citizen voices and all that. We need a very strong and independent media in Zambia that can offer checks and balances, the media that can freely criticize the state, a free media that can criticize those that are in public offices. Because right now, what we have is neither no independent media, because the government has become so hard on the media that they want everyone to be singing their tune. But that is not what we want. In our development discourse, we want a free media that is going to offer checks and balances offer transparency and accountability for those people that who have elected in public offices. But it's not happening now, because anyone who has a critical voice in the media is either harassed or they are shut down or they suffer some of these suppressions that will not make them adequate to operate freely.
What would you say is the best way forward to ensure a conducive media environment?
What we need are clear laws, because we have very bad laws, very draconian laws, for instance, defamation of the president. These are laws that are impeding free media in Zambia. We need the enactment of the Freedom of Information Act, the Access to Information Bill that has been stuck in Parliament for a very long time. We need those that are in government, for example, to stay clear of the media, not to harass, not to intimidate journalists, because when journalists are intimidated, they cannot operate freely, they cannot report independently, because there's this invisible hand that is always hovering the operations of the media in Zambia.
Richard Mulonga is an independent Zambian multimedia journalist. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. For the last 40 years, the Ghana Shippers Authority has efficiently managed Ghanaian commercial shipping, this with a view to protecting and promoting the interest of shippers in relation to international trade and transport logistics. I recently sat down with Dr. Kofi Mbia, the Chief Executive Officer of the Ghana Shippers Authority. In part one of this interview, he spoke about the impact of international trade on Ghana.
I must say that the impact globally and locally is very much the same. It mimics itself, because you would realize that oil prices were between $120 to $140 a barrel, you know, and by 2015, the price of oil had dropped to as low as $30 per barrel, and that impacted significantly also on world trade. While at one end of the spectrum, it meant that prices were low and therefore it could generate an economy, on the other spectrum, it meant that investment into oil and gas dwindled, and countries that developed on the back of their oil and gas industry also suffered. Countries such as Nigeria, and even though Ghana is a nascent oil industry, you know, has a nascent oil industry, it impacted also strongly on Ghana's economy, because the budget could not be supported with the expectations of growth that were anticipated. We're looking at oil at the price of around $90 to $100 a barrel, and for it to come all the way to $45 per barrel meant that there was a significant reduction in the expected revenues as far as government was concerned. So these things also impacted on seaborne trade.
Let's come back to the Ghana Shippers Authority and its mandate that it's been given. What value do you think this adds to the Ghanaian economy and its subsequent impact?
Thank you very much. You know, in developed economies, they are very concerned about their logistics performance in index. That is to say, to what extent have you removed bottlenecks in trade flows? When you remove bottlenecks in trade flows, it means that you get goods to move from one end to the other end as early as possible. Consequently, there are least delays. You save cost and you become more competitive. And that is very important. Unfortunately, however, from our side of the world, we have not been very particular about the performance of our logistics. And consequently, our rankings, you know, are always based on what the World Bank has said, because we have not sat down to do a proper evaluation of our logistics performance. So we have a fair idea, you know, but I think that we need to do something more comprehensive than we have done in the times past. And when you don't have many people engaging in the export, it means sometimes you cannot meet the requirements of those who demand the supplies from you. And it's therefore important that in adding value, we should look at these bottlenecks, remove the bottlenecks, streamline the processes, when people should be able to sit in the comfort of their offices or their homes and get their cargo to arrive at the port in quick time.
Talking about streamlining, what programs or perhaps measures have you implemented to transform the maritime trade and transport sector in Ghana?
Thank you very much. For Ghana Shipping Authority, we have put in place a number of mechanisms to try not only to help the shipper, as it were, because one of our key things is, you know, shippers generally in Africa are fragmented. You know, we don't have the Kmart, we don't have the Walmart, you know. It means these are very small players who are in the trade. Consequently, they are vulnerable. At the same time, they need education from time to time. So what the Ghana Shippers Authority has done is we have set up mechanisms by which we could educate these shippers, make them aware of their rights, let them know what international trade transactions entail. So based on that, they will be able to transact businesses with their counterparts very quickly. So we have shipper complaint and support units. For example, at the land borders, in Lubo, in Paga, at Aflao, at the Kutuka International Airport, in Takrade Port, we have these complaint centers which provide real-time information to importers and exporters. We also have the shipper committees in all of the 10 regions of Ghana, which addresses the issues that confront importers and exporters and brings into being the issues that they believe would affect a smooth flow of trade. Consequently, it helps to change policy. So government policy could be changed based on the information which they bring to us. We take on board that information, use the Ministry of Transport, which is our parent ministry, and then get some policies formulated so as to help change some of these things.
Dr. Kofi Mbia is the Chief Executive Officer of the Ghana Shippers Authority. He spoke with me from the capital, Accra. Cameroon says its military has seized a large consignment of weapons from armed groups based in the Central African Republic. The groups, officials say, have been stealing and carrying out attacks in the northern part of Cameroon. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kenzeka has the story from Ngondere.
Kildadi Tagioke Bukar, governor of the Adamawa region of Cameroon, displayed some of the weapons seized during the military operation, including guns, grenades and piles of ammunition were laid out on tabs.
I am totally satisfied. You have seen this quantity of arms our guys have taken. It's a good thing that the forces are out to secure our population. I want to seize the opportunity to encourage forces of law and order to do everything possible to put an end to criminality, which is rampant in our region.
During the military operation, the governor said several of the attackers were either killed or arrested, while others fled back across the border to the Central African Republic. Bukar says armed men from the Central African Republic have been organizing regular attacks on Cameroonian territory for the past 3 months. He says they have kidnapped cattle ranchers and business persons for ransom, attacked farmers for food supplies, and used Cameroon's territory as a hideout when they ran into trouble with United Nations peacekeepers in their own country. The governor says several hostages were freed during this operation, and soldiers also seized drugs used by the fighters. It is unclear whether the fighters belong to a specific rebel group in the CAR. The governor would not say. The Central African Republic has been awash in militias since a rebel coup in March 2013 plunged the country into chaos. The UN peacekeeping mission, along with the new government elected a year ago, has been able to restore some stability, but insecurity persists in the countryside. Moki, Edwin Kinzika, for VOA News, Ngaoundary.
Two South African clothing designers are gaining stature for the excellence of their garments around the world. Husband and wife team Kaya and Bianca Sibiya call their company Punk and Ivy. Through their innovative clothing, they say they want to reflect life in Africa. The Sibiyas say Punk and Ivy's mission is to create active streetwear tailored to the needs of urban Africans. For VOA, Darren Taylor reports in part three of a series on people in South Africa handcrafting goods of exceptional quality.
The audience reacts at a recent fashion show in Johannesburg as models wearing Punk and Ivy's latest daring creations slink down the catwalk. Bianca Sabia shows off some of hers and her husband's latest designs. There's an olive blazer made from microfiber and decorated with the red and yellow heads of chickens. The lining on its pockets reflects Punk and Ivy's drive to experiment.
This is actually snakeskin. And all that is essentially is just another way for us to be able to kind of customize and make it our own.
CBR says she was shocked to discover a few years ago that the so-called African prints used by most clothing designers on the continent are made in Europe and China. So she and her partner designed their own South African-made prints.
We try to kind of recreate and reimagine the idea of a camouflage. So it looks a lot like a lot of the different colored amoebas, all in berries and browns, cool kind of creams and the touches of black. And then we played a lot with burgundy.
Punk and Ivy's designs include khaki blazers with leather pockets and buttons, a maroon, white, blue and yellow patterned shirt, and a striking orange jersey.
It looks a bit like a sunset, actually. Camouflage with touches of burgundy. And I love the fact that we can play with stuff like this.
The Sabia's clothes are handmade by local tailors, according to each individual buyer's wishes.
Our clientele generally are males between the ages of 18 to 55. And we find that a lot of them enjoy having something made that is custom for them that only they own.
Although most customers are men, the firm's clothes are manufactured to be worn by all genders.
We like to work with garments that are androgynous, so we don't deal with frocks and dresses necessarily, but a woman can equally look great in a zip-up blazer as opposed to a man. So I think it was important for us to also kind of teach the young people and our consumer base that, you know, you don't necessarily have to stick to the traditions of what the major retailers are telling you to wear.
Sabia says she's disappointed that Punk and Ivy isn't able to use locally made fabric because at the moment South Africa doesn't produce enough of it and most is imported. It does, however, use local leather. Sabia says across the continent there's a swing towards dressing more African and to stop following European and American fashion trends.
People are very aware of the African economy and the power that it has. And it's important that we embrace that because if we don't help ourselves, then we can't keep looking to the East and West to try and fix our economies.
She wants to explore Africa more to learn from other designers.
I am planning to do a lot more travel into East and West Africa specifically. And it's not just for fabric sourcing. It's also just to understand what is definitive in terms of fashion.
Sabia says Punk and Ivy has flipped the concept of the traditional clothing label on its head.
Everybody goes kind of the regular idea around being a designer. You come up with a collection, you establish a brand, and you start a retail space, and then that's kind of where it ends, essentially, you know. And we were like, well, it's all good and well to have a retail space, but how do people get access to you? So we started the idea of having a mobile space.
This the company achieved by creating Africa's first mobile boutique, taking its bespoke garments to more people at street markets, for example, using a 42-year-old Dodge motorhome imported from the United States.
Ooh. This is a 1974 vehicle. It takes a good 30 minutes to warm up. It's like an old lady that needs like a panado and a cup of tea and a gin and tonic.
The Sabias refurbished the vehicle into their so-called motique. It's now their primary trade space, lined with mirrors, hanging space for their clothes, and a change room. But with Punk and Ivy's growing international reputation, there's also plenty of space for their works at premier fashion shows.
Somehow we ended up becoming influencers for like the street-level youth space. You know, we're very much about Pan-Africanism. We're very much about expression. We're very much about elevating and reimagining Africa in whatever small way we can.
But the Sabia's influence isn't small, and demand for their clothes from fashion capitals across Europe attests to that. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
You already know.
Said I'm so in love with you, baby. Oh, anything you want me to, baby. Oh, I still wanna give you to, baby. Baby, dance to my shoes. Then go put this love on you. Yeah, don't go, I love how they see for your eyes, I give all that you need and I won't think twice, it's double six when I throw the dice, oh girl, I'm loving your size, there is no deceiving, with you girl I'm winning, the way you do the things you do, you make me scream what I'm feeling, oh girl, you give me the healing, I'm down for your feeling, the way you do the things you do, you make me scream what I'm feeling. I'm so in love with you, baby. Oh, everything you want me to, baby. Oh, I still wanna give you to, baby. Baby, that's too much to lose. Then go put this love on you. Yeah, don't go low.
Jumbolo, up I'm gonna get today, my baby. Then go no, say me and you will not be play, my baby. Then go say anything where they wanna say, my baby. We go be anything that we wanna be. I'm in love with you, baby girl, I'm in love with you. Wanna dance with you, baby girl, wanna dance with you. Baby, click a tie, if they get on a demon, baby, dance to my sukus. Baby, muna gige be.
With a bishaka, you gonna know. Are you ready now? Baby girl, show them. Show them.
Mr. Flame of Fire!
Baby, it's so fine.
and waist at the shape. You don't know. Are you ready now? Lift your shoulder.
Get bumping, yeah, you know that I wanna get bumping, yeah. It's all about you freaking. my jumping. The way you jiggle and wiggle it on your front end. All you do is make them confused. Hey. Some of them, them are shouting. There's a pins, them are see, them are doubting. Hey. It's all about you breaking the rules.
Shaking, hope you're not faking it. Cause your body is what I need to set you free. Set you free. Yes, I know you know we know exactly what I feel. Hey. You want it, yeah, so come on, yeah.
Waka waka baby, oh, yeah. corner, baby. And I go tell my mama, and I go tell my papa, and I go tell them, say, you be waka waka, baby. You be chuku chuku, baby. Baby, sawale, sawa, sawa, sawale, sawa, sawa, sawale. Pom pom, ikoro koto. I wish I boom boom.
one. Faster music. Your lover, baby, please give me. Oh. I'm going crazy. Oh, let me be your maga. Your maga. I want to be your maga. Your lover,
tell me what you want.
Oh, 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 hey.
I just wanna know your need.
Cause the way you do, cause the body, I like the way you do the body, body. Make me want to the gummy body, the gummy body.
Ha, okay.
Eh? Oh yeah, the popo.
Baby, let me go the popo.
Ah.
Oh yeah, the popo.
Eh?
Baby, let me go the popo. Cause you go the popo, so let me go the popo.
Oh yeah, tonight. Your lover, baby, please give me. I'm going crazy. Oh, let me be your maga. Your maga. I want to be your maga.
I said,
your lover.
There is something about this, your body, where they make me get jolly. When I see you, my baby, I just like you happy. Oh, 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 my baby. Do they sweep me? Oh, 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 my baby. Tonight, oh, yeah, limpopo.
Baby, let me go limpopo.
What?
Oh, yeah, limpopo. Baby, let me go limpopo.
Okay.
Cause you go limpopo. So let me go limpopo.
Oh, yeah. Tonight. Oh, tonight. Oh. Baby, please give me. I want to be your man, your lover. Baby, please give me. I'm going crazy.
Hey,
let me be your man.
Let me be your man.
I want to be your man. Your lover.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Salin, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaites, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, ashes fly back into the face of him who throws them. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On President Barack Obama's final overseas trip as U.S. president, he gave a ringing endorsement of democracy in its birthplace, Athens, Greece. Mr. Obama noted that 25 centuries ago, in the rocky hills around Athens, a new idea emerged.
Demokratia. Kratos. Kratos, the power, the right to rule, comes from thymos, the people. The notion that we are citizens, not servants, but stewards of our society. The belief in equality before the law, not just for a few, but for the many, not just for the majority, but also the minority.
Mr. Obama observed that throughout human history, there have been those who argue that people cannot handle democracy, that they need to be told what to do. But, he said, the fundamental desire to have control of our lives and our future, these yearnings are universal. They burn in every human heart. President Obama pointed out that the United States supports democratic governance not just because it comports with the values the U.S. holds dear, but also because history has demonstrated that democracies tend to be more just and more stable and more successful.
In contrast to regimes that rule by coercion, democracies are rooted in consent of the governed. Citizens know that there's a path for peaceful change, including the moral force of nonviolence. And that brings a stability that so often can facilitate economic growth.
President Obama also noted that democracies are less likely to fight wars among themselves and, because of their inclusiveness and strength, are more welcoming to refugees and people in need. In addition, that inclusiveness and strength enable democracies to stand up to those who seek to change people's way of life through violence, while at the same time hindering those in power from betraying fundamental democratic values. President Obama acknowledged that in a globalized world where people from a variety of backgrounds try to live together, the practice of democracy can be difficult. But he emphasized it is democracy that allows us to bend the arc of history, in Dr. Martin Luther King's words, to justice. In this great, imperfect, but necessary system of self-government, power and progress will always come from the demos, from we the people, said Mr. Obama. And as long as we are true to that system of self-government, our futures will be bright.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.